This next 20 minutes is going to be divided among three individuals from the state and from BLM. And I think, is John going first? Okay. John Hoppe is geologist and lead mineral examiner with BLM. And these three gentlemen are going to be presenting on the permitting steps for mines, agencies involved, and public involvement in those processes. And I'll introduce each of them as they take their turn. But first, John Hoppe.
My name is John Hoppe. I'm a geologist with the BLM in Anchorage.
And just, he's not on this sheet, but I think Meredith can provide his contact information afterward. Yeah, sorry, John, I don't think you're on this sheet because you were kind of...
James works in the cubicle next to me, so...
Wanted to come together.
His contact
correspondence to James.
Why not? But yeah, John Hoppe with BLM, and Meredith has his contact information.
Well, probably wondering why the BLM is here, because there's not a whole lot of BLM land around here. It's mostly Forest Service and such. But, I'm sorry. I'll move that closer. The BLM kind of does three things in Alaska. One of those is we administer all the federal mining claims, meaning when someone stakes a mining claim, they have to file it with the BLM and we track all their maintenance and fees and such. Then also, we convey federal lands to the state and native corporations. So that's still ongoing. There's about 95% completed, but it's still a number of years from being finished. And also, we manage 72 million acres of public lands in Alaska, mostly interior. You can see on the map behind me here, that's the big green blotch on the north is the MPRA. But we also administer it's about 7,600 acres that Constantine Metals mining claims that they lease are located. Because of the conveyance situation, those pre-existing rights maintain them as federal land. And those are managed by the BLM until they go away or conveyed. So I'm going to, how do I?
Just the down arrow, I think, is probably your easiest.
Does it work? Yep. There it is. I'm going to talk about a little bit about mining law and the surface use laws, and then James Whitlock's going to talk about kind of BLM regulations and permitting process. The mining law of 1872, people have kind of heard about it or know generally of it. But it's got an interesting history. It's over 140 years long, been around for 140 years. The law itself is about 5 pages, and it's actually a pretty interesting read. But it's been amended through the years by numerous laws. Like, you used to be able to stake a mining claim for an oil deposit. And then somewhere in about 1945, they removed common sand and gravel from the mining law, so you couldn't stake a mining claim for sand and gravel. That's always an irony that federal government, you can have gold and copper, but you have to buy gravel. So I'm going to read one part here just because I'm packing about 140 years worth of case law into about 2 sentences. So currently, a person who makes a discovery of a valuable metallic mineral deposit on federal public land that is not closed to mining for some reason may stake a claim to the minerals. Then they must record that claim with the local recording office. In Alaska, that's the state. And then they file a copy of that claim with the BLM. Okay, so once that claim is accepted as proper by the BLM, they now own the valuable minerals on and in the ground within that mining claim. So as long as they maintain that claim, meaning annual filings, maintenance fees, or physical labor, they maintain that property right. So that they've established a property right. They own those metals as long as they maintain that claim. So that property right can be sold, bought, inherited, willed, subdivided. But the right to extract those minerals can be asserted so long as it abides by the, and I leave that part up there, under regulations prescribed by law. So they have the title to the minerals, but the right to remove those minerals has to follow all laws and regulations. So there's kind of, and I'm just going to touch on two things. NEPA, National Environmental Protection Act of 1969.
Policy Act.
I'm sorry, Policy Act. And FLTMA, which is Federal Land Management Policy Act. And NEPA was made to ensure that environmental factors are weighted equally with other considerations when the federal government makes a decision or has an action. And we have to analyze the information available, produce alternatives, make information available to the public, and let the public be involved in the decision process. James will talk more about how NEPA has worked into the BLM permitting process. And then as far as BLM management, unlike like the Park Service or Fish Wildlife, where they have kind of a mandate to protect a resource, BLM has a multiple-use mandate. I mean, we're to protect the environment, but also allow multiple use as it's allowed in a sustainable fashion. So that's kind of the few little take-homes I want is a mining claim, as long as it's maintained and proper, is a property right to the minerals in the ground. But that has to meet the regulations and laws on the books, and that includes the NEPA, where public is involved. It's in the law that they're involved in the federal decisions. So now I'm going to hand it over to James to talk more about the BLM.
Thanks, John.
Process.
Yeah, James Whitlock. He's also with BLM, Alaska Mining Program Lead, Acting Environmental Scientist with the Anchorage District Office. You going to speak from there? That good?
Yeah, I'll stay here.
Okay, you guys are right on target. You got 13 minutes.
Okay. Again, my name is James, and I'm just going to talk to you about the BLM's process. We've got to pack in an entire regulatory process into about 10 minutes. And so John, up to this point, has discussed some of the basic law that pushes what we have to do on the ground for regulatory compliance. Under that, the Congress established our Code of Federal Regulations. So there's a surface management regulations, which dictate how mining will be done on the ground. So it identifies the types of mining and then the methods and the different activities that you can do on the ground. And then use and occupancy is kind of a separate thing. And what use and occupancy is of under the mining law is it describes the process for putting power lines, power sites, buildings, your mills, those kind of things on a mining claim. Because those are incident to your mining activity. You're going to be mining a resource, but you need ancillary facilities to support that mining operation. So the use and occupancy of a mining claim is different than the surface management of it. But this conversation, we're going to focus pretty much on the surface management part. What kind of mining can we do? Then in 2012, the surface management regulations were further described by a surface management handbook, which really just kind of is a nice thick book that kind of breaks down what the regulations say, because I'm sure some of you have probably seen federal regulations that get a little bit confusing in their depth, and it's quite amazing how complex they can get. So the surface management regs, again, talk about the mining process. They were revised in 2001, originally created in 1981, and the surface management handbook. But the surface management handbook, the surface management regulations and the use and occupancy regulations and the Federal Land Policy Management Act that John talked about are three components that kind of work together that are all connected through what we call unnecessary and undue degradation. So the primary driver behind our regulatory process is that a mining company, a mining activity needs to prevent unnecessary and undue degradation to the natural environment. And those key factors are really defined within the regulations under our performance standards. There's obviously other things that come to it. You have to have activities incident to your operations and those such, or if you're a failure to attain the correct permit, if you're going to be operating, say, in a natural conservation area, an NCA, and then wild and scenic rivers also. But really, we're going to look at the performance standards. So performance standards are in the regulations, are 13 very specific things that they identify that a mining operation, that any mining activity on federal mining claims must abide by. And again, these are BLM regulations, so this doesn't apply to Forest Service or other. These are the BLM's policies. So these 13 performance standards and some examples are reclamation and access to access routes, fish and wildlife habitat. There's kind of a whole wide range of them, and they are things that we can measure and identify on successful activity on the ground that's protecting the environment, including complying with other laws, Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, and those kind of things. So, you know, even state law is a component that we require all mining companies or mining activity, to comply with. So under the regulations, every activity that takes place out there has to comply with the performance standards. So what are the type of activities you can do out there? Well, one of them is casual use. That one is a little bit different. That's weekend warrior out there with your gold pan and sluice box shovel and just out there having fun with your family. That's quite a bit different than mining that we're going to talk about with notices and plans. So a casual use is recreational, doesn't really have to apply it. It does not apply to any performance standards or those things. But we're going to talk about notices and plans. So a notice is an exploration-only project. So it's looking at only delineating the resource. You're drilling holes or trenching, and you're trying to figure out the extent of your resource and how the economics on that resource are going to play out, if it's going to become an actual mine that's going to be developed. The requirements, regulations require that a notice activity be 5 acres or less to fall under this category. You have to have 1,000 tons of bulk sample or less of presumed ore. You can't do notices in certain areas, such as a wild and scenic river or such. And one of the key things to take home here is that the NEPA process does not apply to a notice. A notice is not a federal action. It does not have a decision associated with it. The intent of a notice is to get the company out on the ground to do exploration, to identify if it's a worthwhile resource to develop. So this is, the intent is to help determine the economics of the resource, and then if it is, it'll move into the next phase, which is a plan of operations. But there is a 2-year limit on a notice, which can be renewed as needed with review from the BLM. So what exactly is involved in a notice? We got to contact the BLM office, first of all. We really prefer to have knowledge of where you want to do this thing at and where it's at, and we can provide guidance. But you have to provide a very precise narrative that explains your activity and how your exploration activity is going to prevent unnecessary and undue degradation in the environment. And you do that by showing how you're going to reach each of those performance standards. In addition to all that information, you have to have a reclamation plan submitted and a bond. The actual notice activity is bonded for the reclamation component, so there's that financial assurance. So once you've done your exploration and you've decided, hey, this is an economical resource that I want to develop, or, and this is a key or here, or you've exceeded that 5 acres or that 1,000-ton bulk sample that's allowed under notice, you'd have to move into a plan of operation. So you can actually do an exploration under a plan. It just means that your total surface disturbance is greater than 5 acres, or you've exceeded your 1,000 tons bulk sample. So we'll just assume that you've identified a resource that's worthwhile and you want to mine it. So you're going to submit a plan of operations. The key here, again, the driver behind all this is, does that plan prevent unnecessary and undue degradation of the environment? We work jointly through this process with the state and other federal agencies, so like the large mine permitting team. that kind of helps coordinate with all the state agencies to make sure permits are moving forward. And, of course, they have to be bonded as well. So what exactly is involved in a plan? What do we need to see? Well, I can't put it all up on one slide, and it would take a while to go through all the different components, but this is a summary of just a few of the things. Water management plans and riparian mitigation plans, a lot of these things, they detail specific. Some of them are driven and further defined by baseline data collection. And things like, the reclamation cost estimate is a very detailed breakdown of what it will actually cost to do reclamation of the site. And, of course, all of this has to be bonded. So that reclamation cost estimate drives what the reclamation cost will be, and then that amount has to be bonded for through the process. So you've written up all your mine plan. You've got everything put together. Next, submit to the BLM, and we do a completeness review. And that completeness review, we're not looking at the environmental impacts at this point. All we're looking at is, does your proposed plan meet what the regulations say you have to have in your plan? That's all we're looking at is just, does it have the required information? And if it does, we move forward with the next step. If it doesn't, we'll send it back to you identifying these are the deficiencies you have, correct them, and resubmit it to us. But once we have it complete, we've done a completeness review on it, then it moves into an internal process. And I say internal just because initially we have to kind of get a hold of the project. All of the team players, the interdisciplinary team that works on this has to come on board, and we start working through this process of the National Environmental Policy Act analysis. There's two paths that can play out for the NEPA document, and that's an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement. Given the limited time frame that we have, I really can't dive down into how the two interact and how they're driven forward. But ultimately, after the NEPA analysis is done, and the decision record then is signed, and that decision record then would have conditions of approval that would typically go along with it. So you're going to have an approved mine plan along with conditions. But one of the key things through this whole process is public involvement. There's an opportunity for public involvement during the plan review process, initially when NEPA starts, as well as plan review or public involvement through the NEPA for various scoping level commenting periods. So the public can be involved in this process, and is often a major part of our driving factor when we're coming up with our decision. But once the BLM has completed everything, you've paid your bond, you have your paperwork, the decision's been signed, you can go and start mining, and the BLM then transfers into what we call the compliance and enforcement. And this is where we're working with the mining company, their day-to-day operations as they're moving their mine into development and or developing their mine all the way into closure and working with them. Now, at certain times throughout the process, there might be changes to the mine plan. They realize they need to expand the tailings pond, they do this, they do that, whatever. We modify the mine plan, and sometimes we have to do new NEPA with that. So it's an integrative process that is very dynamic as we move forward. And compliance doesn't mean that we're going there looking for everything to shut them down. It means that we're going there and we're looking at everything to make sure that they're complying with the rules. We're working with them to identify more efficient ways of performing their mine activity. If there's shortfalls or failures, we identify those and work with the company. Enforcement can be anything from basic from a non-compliance, which means you made a mistake, we've identified the mistake, here's how you need to fix it, and then here's the measures, here's what we're going to do to measure the successes on that, what you've corrected. Live and learn, you move on, and non-compliance is meant to be kind of a smaller application, whereas you can move all the way up through the enforcement pyramid to where you can actually get to plan revocation, which you would actually take away close the mine plan out, and then we also have the option to move to bond forfeiture and using the bond to actually perform the reclamation on site. So there's a whole range of activities, but again, the BLM, our intent is to work with the mining companies and help them move through the mining process. And it's a very complicated process moving through the regulatory framework. And so we work with our state agencies, and I will be the next one coming up there talking about how we integrate.
And that's Kyle Mozell. Kyle Mozell is with the Large Mine. He's a Large Mine Project Manager with the state, Alaska Department of Natural Resources.
You're listening to KHNS Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. This is a special presentation of the mining presentations that took place at the Chilkat Center in Haines on April 7th.
Thanks. I will be real brief. Again, I'm Kyle Moselle, large mine project manager for Alaska Department of Natural Resources. And in one slide, this is the state's coordinated permitting process for a large hard rock or lode mine. Because I'm short on time, we want to get to questions and answers, and you guys are doing great, by the way, so far. And so I'll follow one part of this visual aid that I put together that will complement what John and James were just talking about. So with this model that I've built, you start in the center, which is my office, Office of Project Management and Permitting. We're a non-regulatory staff officer entity within the Department of Natural Resources. So we have no regulatory authority. No one will ever get a permit from me. I have no decision-making ability. But my responsibility is to work with the state departments and agencies and our federal partner agencies to help the project proponent and the agencies navigate the complex permitting process that we have. And so just building on what John and James were saying, following from Natural Resources Department here, when we get to the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, the mining section, we have mining claims as well. So these are state mining claims. And then we have the application for permits to mine in Alaska. This is I think this would be equivalent to your notice. This APMA covers mining activities that are less than 5 acres in disturbance, no discharges of water needed, no disposal of waste rock needed, that type of stuff. And then going on from that, once you need to go beyond that level of disturbance or get into more complex mining, then you have a plan of operations on our side as well. And then also when you get to this plan of operations phase, you also need a reclamation and closure plan. And so if the project is on federal land, we can accept a lot of the same things that the proponent would be providing to the lead federal agency. We can accept those as well. So they don't have to make two plans of operations or file two reclamation plans. We work with the federal agency to cut out the duplication. Financial assurances. This is the bonding that we've talked about. The color coding here is all of the authorizations that are out here on the outside of this model. They're color coded to the department that issues those. The reason why financial assurance shares both green and purple in this model is because financial assurances has to be approved by both Department of Natural Resources and Department of Environmental Conservation. And then our Department of Revenue has an advisory role to that process as well. And then we bring in our federal partners. They advise through the large mine permit team. So they also need to agree to that financial assurance, those costs that we assign to the large project, the mine project. And that way the project proponent, again, gets agreement from all the agencies, state, federal, on what the required bonding is going to be. They provide that, and the agencies usually sign into a memorandum of understanding agreeing that the federal agency will hold those bonds and what the roles and responsibilities would be. And so on DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, the major authorizations here are the Alaska Pollution Discharge Elimination System, the APDES permit. That's under the Clean Water Act, starting in 2008. Our Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation started assuming the administrative responsibilities for the Clean Water Act in Alaska. So now instead of an NPDES permit, someone needs an APDES permit. And then the waste management permit is also a major permit. I've highlighted the boxes in red that have a statutory public notice requirement. Some of these here, like the APMA, the Plan of Operations, the Reclamation Closure Plan, there's not a requirement to public notice those that's found in statute, but we will publicly notice those. The Reclamation Plan gets noticed with the Waste Management Permit because it also includes the financial assurances. The APMAs are noticed on DNR's website. So that's as much time as I'll spend on that. But in one slide, this is a representation of why coordination can help.
All right, thank you, Kyle.
That's what I do.
That's Kyle Mozell, Large Mine Project Manager with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources.